It started, I think it's 70s, 80s, it started, you know, from here. I mean, from West as an alternative to, you know, mass tourism. But at present, what is happening, we are looking for an alternative to ecotourism, because ecotourism is also a kind of an expansion of consumer lifestyle. Everything we are expanding to, you know, world protected areas, actually, which is very, very fragile and which is very important. In theory, ecotourism is a very good concept. But in practice, there is a huge contrast, because, you know, what is happening in ground, which is entirely different from these theories, actually.
Can you tell me how?
Yeah. The so-called proponents of ecotourism, for them, the basic idea of ecotourism is conservation. But what is happening in the ground, the so-called ecotourists, they are simply coming to all these protected, fragile ecosystems without any regulation and simply spoiling the environment. This is what is happening in the ground. Almost everywhere, if you go to India's protected areas, wildlife sanctuaries, tiger reserve, you can see that.
Can you give me an example?
No, like tiger conservation is a big discussion in India. If you go to Kerala, for example, there is a famous tiger conservation project called Periyar Tiger Reserve. There is no regulation for tourists. People are coming and going, throwing their litters. Of course, there are laws which is being completely violated by private resorts and things like that. And sometimes state itself violating all these regulations.
When I was reading about the Tiger Reserve, it said that SUVs will just drive into the forest carrying these visitors and it'll crush the flora as it goes along. What's the effect on the tigers themselves?
There is a considerable, you know, decrease in number of tigers, actually, you know. So there are studies, actually. But there are a number of other issues which is related to tiger reserves. The tiger reserves are not just tiger conservation and ecotourism. It's beyond that. And you know, there was a recent verdict of Supreme Court. I mean, it is India's, you know, the highest level of court. They temporarily banned ecotourism in tiger reserves.
Now, some of the reason that those who are earning money from ecotourism are against it is they say they're not going to be able to generate funds, and that means that these areas will not have funds for conservation. What you're saying is that their initiatives are actually even harming the environment, and what they're saying is our initiatives bring interest. It makes people interested in natural areas. It gives them knowledge. It generates income for the local economy. What's your opinion on that?
All this discussion completely isolated or completely kept away this indigenous community. They are the prominent people in these areas because, you know, according to the statistics, I think something like 77,000 people, I mean, predominantly indigenous communities, they are living in these protected areas. I mean, 39 tiger reserves are in India and they are not in the discussion. They are prior informed consents are not there in this, you know, conservation. And they are completely displacing from these areas without any, you know, proper rehabilitation and things like that. You know?
How do they get displaced from these communities?
Like, for example, you know, there are tiger, you know, projects and there are legislations like, you know, critical tiger habitat. Government can declare an area like critical tiger habitat and they can displace communities. There are two kinds of zones. One is buffer zone and one is core zone. So core zone is a kind of nobody can enter except forest, you know, officials. So they are displacing people actually without proper rehabilitation and things like that. And, you know, if you consider the cost of ecotourism, if you consider the world market, it is something, world market of tourism, the share of ecotourism is something like 5 to 6%. Still, it is a niche market, but it is highly priced compared to other mass tourism. You can see that most of the money goes to big players or you know, local elites or whatever, whether it doesn't matter, like whether it's an Indian company or foreign company, that doesn't really matter. But it's all goes to some other people. And these poor people, they are the victims, actually. You know, what they did, actually, they had a huge campaign on tiger conservation, which also created a kind of a conservation, you know, awareness among rich Indian middle class. And what they do, actually, they are coming to all these pristine areas in the name of conservation, displacing people and, you know, polluting the place.
Now, that's something I really wanted to ask you about. So people come into these areas and some of the pollution that they produce is not just because they're using cars to get into this area, but also because they're throwing away trash or sometimes swimming pools are being built nearby.
Yeah. Water shortage is there, actually, especially these forest areas. You know, it's not, water is not abundant in these areas, most of these areas. So many of the, you know, resorts and all constructed inside the forest, they're using water for, you know, swimming pool. And, you know, water for, you know, exotic plants, like, you know, they have lawns, you know, and all, you know, they have to water it. So this all creating lots of, and consumption of water, definitely, which is creating water, you know, scarcity.
What if you are an urban dweller and you have a real desire to know nature? You want to go into the forest, you want to see tigers, you want to see these creatures in the wild. But how do you do that in a way that's respectful when it sounds like it's so difficult? The word ecotourism is so appealing. And when I open a brochure and I see beautiful, happy animals and beautiful green pastures and beautiful forests, and I think, I can go and visit this place and I'm not going to do something bad. In fact, it's good. I'm cultivating an interest in the world. I'm going to put money into the local economy, and I'm going to do it without tearing it apart. Now, listening to this interview, of course, people are going to think, wait a minute, it's not actually that easy. So what would you say to the curious urban dweller who says, I want to go into nature, how can I do that in a way that doesn't cause problems for local communities, doesn't tear apart the environment, and turns me into a responsible traveler?
This is a very interesting and very practical issue. As a person who's really interested with, you know, kind of an educational intention, you can and you should visit the, you know, place. But, you know, then you have to keep all your, you know, consumer burdens in your own place, and you have to travel responsibly. Most of the people now, they are coming to these places for, you know, just enjoyment. For example, I'll tell you one classical example. India, I'm not talking about Western tourists now, because the Indian middle class also so powerful now. It's changing very rapidly. And, you know, cities like Bangalore, which is a, you know, IT hub, I mean, information technology hub, and people are working 5 days like anything, and they are just coming to these places for just an enjoyment, for boozing, and they are partying, which is creating a lot of problems. This kind of tourism has to be eliminated from protected areas. The current form of ecotourism, this is just another, you know, mass tourism. That is something which we are questioning. And if you want to really travel as a ecotourist, you have to be qualified to be an ecotourist. I mean, that qualification is not there. Anybody can come as an ecotourist now. And also, there has to be certain preparation. There has to be, you know, proper information.
So actually, one element, something that we can work on as individuals,
yeah,
is that we can better prepare. Instead of saying, I'm an ecotourist just because I'm going on an eco-tour, isn't enough. We need to learn about where it is that we're going. What other ways can I prepare myself?
One thing, you know, you have to consume little. Like, for example, you have to prefer a, you know, normal place to stay. Probably, you know, there are people you can stay there. You don't need to create another infrastructure for that.
You know, you mean don't stay in a hotel, but
I would
say, local
definitely, you don't need hotels and all in ecotourism areas. You have to use existing facilities. Why are you creating another infrastructure, which is again, I mean, destroying the environment, you know, and using plenty of resources? So that is where you can start. I mean, the consumption, number one. And second thing, you know, you can also use less water, and you can avoid throwing the water bottles or whatever. And also, you know, you can use their own water and all. It's not easy to be like that, I'm telling you. Practically, it is not easy, because, you know, it's the given pressure from the market. It's given pressure from our own government and all. It's not easy. But I think this is the only way. But it is a tough way.
So I guess what we have to accept is that ecotourism isn't going to be comfortable tourism necessarily. We may have to adjust to nature, adjust to the lack of facilities, or maybe we're going to have to eat food that we're not used to eating, or we're not going to have a swimming pool in the place where we're staying. Is that the kind of thing you mean? To prepare yourself for a slightly more rugged experience because you're going to be in nature?
Definitely. Why you need a swimming pool in an ecotourism place? I mean, so if you want, you can go to a river and swim. Otherwise, you don't. I mean, what is happening, you're also creating some kind of an artificial facilities, which is against nature.
Sumesh Mangalasheri is the director of Kabani, an initiative in Kerala, India, working on tourism and sustainable development. I'm so pleased that you joined us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.